Thanks for listening to this bonus podcast from Suzy Larson Live. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of so much for tuning in to this bonus podcast with Suzy Larson Live. I'm glad to have you listening today. I talked to Dr. Mark Sherwood during the live show, and our intent was to cover emotional, physical, intellectual, and spiritual health and how you can't just focus on one to the expense of the neglect of others and still enjoy the kind of flourishing health God has for you. I will tell you, we had so many questions that came in our text line. We didn't really fully get to the content, but we always want to serve our listeners first. But this is why we're so grateful, Dr. Mark, that you hung in there with us and decided to stay on with us so we could cover the content. Thanks for sticking with us.
Sure, and hopefully it's helping people today and encouraging them.
Yeah, well, it's a super encouraging show. So many people texted in after saying, thank you for covering this stuff for us and caring about our health. So what a great show that was. Well, let's start here. You say some of your core pillars for physical health are nutrition, sleep, movement, stress management, hormones, genetics, and peptides. So you talked a bit about nutrition on the show. Maybe say a bit about sleep, and we'll work through this list.
Well, sleep is the underappreciated stepchild, if you will, of health. We sometimes put sleep as a waste of time, especially those people that say we're very successful. We got to maximize our time of being attentive. But in reality, we all need to sleep about 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep a night. That's when the body can recover, regenerate, rebuild. The very important thing I want people to catch about that is that's when the brain can become washed from the inside out. This lymphatic drainage system activates at night when we're resting, and that's when the brain can sort of wash out toxins and wash out waste products and get rebuilt for the next day. A good analogy for people, Suzy, is this. Think about during the day, everybody has that closet that you get into and you pull things out for the day, you sort your stuff out, and then you, at the end of the day, that thing is still messy. Wouldn't it be nice to wake up in the morning and have it all stacked back up for you and ready to go for the next day? That's what a good night's sleep does. It gets the brain unclogged. We get all the memories of the day stored back in the categories that they're supposed to be in, and we're ready to go the next day. So that's very important. So 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep, we want to get at least 4 of those hour-and-a-half-ish cycles completed through the night. And there's ways to track it if people like wearables, but put effort into sleep, please.
Mm-hmm. Very good. How about movement?
I use the term movement because exercise has a bad connotation to it. If you look at the idea, I'm an exercise guy, those that know me, and I go exercise daily. But exercise is overrated. And I'm telling you right now, people really try to exercise away a bad diet, and you can't do it. Actually, the body genetically has only changed 2% in 10,000 years. That's crazy. So how long have gyms been around? Maybe 100, 120? So the body still interprets exercise, especially if it's chronic high-intensity stuff, as being chased by a lion. And that's not going to help with the system at all. So really we just need to move more, sit less, and not be sedentary. Find ways that you can move. Find out what you like to do and do it more. And if you just do that, the body responds very, very well with muscle retention and bone development.
Yeah. I don't remember who said it, but somebody, as a doctor friend, somebody had told me that they are equating not getting up on the hour just to move around, so sitting all day without any movement interruptions, to smoking. I mean, to the devastation it has on your lymph system and all of those things. I don't know if that's an accurate comparison, but the idea, that's why so many watches are giving you a little bit of a reminder, time to get up, because just that kind of movement makes such a difference, doesn't it?
It does. I have a little saying that I use here. It's called the 20 and 2 rule. 20 and 2. And if somebody would take what I'm saying and get a little sticky note, put it on the corner of their computer in a real obnoxious place with 20 and 2. And what that means is for every 20 minutes you sit, stand up for 2. Well, you say, well, that can't be much, Dr. Mark. I don't understand that. But 2 minutes standing up, the body triggers something. It triggers an enzyme called lipase. lipase, and that breaks down fat tissue, because the body is getting up to prepare to run or prepare to move, so it has to break down something to generate fuel. And then if you stand up and sit down within that 2-minute period, guess what? You just did one squat. So in an 8-hour day, you do the math. There you go.
I love it. You know, I do that. You know, I get up and I'll go do squats. I'll do a plank. I'll run up and down my stairs. And I just can't even believe what a difference it makes. And I was one of those high-intense cardio persons, push it all the time. And I learned that it's just slow down and do some Pilates, do some strength, have a stretch day, you know. But just the movement is where you're – and really almost – if you're the person who overdoes it, to listen to your body, mm-hmm. What a concept, but wow.
Yeah, we need to listen to the body. I mean, we don't need to be chronically inflamed all the time, and that's exactly what happens to us. We are so connected. Chronic systemic inflammation, Susie, as we all know, is connected in an integral way to all disease processes. And if we would just understand there's a time to run, there's a time to walk, there's a time to rest. And we have to do all of those things in balance. And as we age, hopefully wisdom takes over. We don't do dumb things as much or as often, and we take better care of ourselves by being more efficient.
That's so healthy and so good. I appreciate that so much. Here's one we don't talk about enough, and it's a major health component, is how we manage stress. Stress management. Say more.
Stress is a overt killer. We need to define stress a different way, and I'm going to give people a different perspective here. Stress has been defined and used in grammatical structures as a noun, and we began to look at this in the wrong way, I feel. Stress, here's a new definition. It is your body's, the action you take in response to life's expected or unexpected occurrences. I'm going to say that one more time. The action you take in response to life's expected or unexpected occurrences. And that puts that action place into a place of a verb. If you frame it like that, that means you have control. Example, everybody has been in a traffic jam before, and you can't do anything about the cars in front of you. You can't do anything about the cars behind you. You can't do anything about time. They're going to move as they move. You might be late for an appointment. But the bottom line is you have two choices at that point. You can respond to it in a negative way or a positive way. A negative way would drive the stress response. You would be hitting your steering wheel. You'd be frantically calling people, trying to figure out how to get around the traffic, how to get off the next exit, honking at people, et cetera, et cetera. Or if you realize you do have control, how about just turning on the Susie Larson Show or something quiet and just listening, maybe nothing, just listening and being quiet. Maybe it's one of those divine delays. And so we need to begin to reframe stress in a different way, making it a verb, giving us a sense of control, because if you don't control and manage stress, I promise you it will control and manage you.
Wow, very, very good. Okay, here's one I want you to talk about is hormones.
So hormones really are not bad. They got a bad name back in the early 2000s with the Women's Health Initiative. And hormones are given to us as these signaling molecules. Think of hormones like emails. We tend to think hormones are just about the sex steroid hormones such as progesterone, testosterone, or estrogen. But hormones are really insulin, cortisol, leptin, ghrelin, thyroid. There's multiple hormones, and they all communicate with each other. So we need to have good email communication system around our body. When we lose communication, communication doesn't occur. So thereby, when a lady, for example, reaches either late perimenopause or menopause, she loses hormone productions, and that's when we lose the signal to make bone. We lose the signal to maintain brain and heart health. And when we lose those signals, those diseases that I just mentioned will grow rapidly in life. So hormone loss or signaling molecule or email loss later in life leads to these disorders. Now, we don't want to replace those things with, in my opinion, synthetic hormones. We want to replace them with what I would consider bioidentical or human-identical hormones. And when we do that, the body's communication systems are restored. We can prevent and or reverse those disease conditions, and we can live a more youthful life later in life. And the key point of hormones is not to be super physiological or hyper dose those things. The key point is to just have a younger milieu of hormones later in life so that we can live younger longer.
Very good. All right, genetics.
Genetics are kind of my wife, Dr. Michelle, and I's fields of high interest right now. Genetics are the hand of God specifically in all of us. We tend to look at genes as a bad thing, but we look at them as a good thing. If you look at genetic diseases, there's only about 2 to 3% of all diseases that are tied to specific genetic mutations. So that tells you something. What about the other 97, 98% respectively? Well, it's a combination of genetics and environment. The epigenetic or environmental genetic conversation yields an output. That's called genetic expression. Look at it as like a downstream river. When the river comes up, there's a problem. We've got flooding down there. But if the river stays a nice flow, we have a good life downstream. And that's exactly what this environment genetic response is supposed to do. However, our genes, as we know, again, as I said earlier, have only changed 2% in 10,000 years, but our environment has changed multiple hundreds of percent over. So now we have this incongruent relationship between our genes and the environment. So therefore, the environment's input to our genes has become devastating. So if we understand our genes and the way they're supposed to work, and we understand how to adjust our environment, you put those two combinations together, and you can create a really cool river downstream, which is sort of analogous with less disease susceptibility. So for us, the genetics of a human being give us red flags, yellow flags, where to look and how to adjust things. So very important for an overall personalized lifestyle beneficial approach.
Give me an example of someone, just their genetic makeup and then their environment adjustments, what that would look like.
Great. So one of the ones that we talk about is everybody's familiar with heart disease, number one killer. But it's interesting. Some people can have a high-fat diet and do quite well. Some people can't have a high-fat diet and do well. Some people can have a glass of wine and consider that a benefit. Some people can have a glass of wine that will cause devastation. These two different approaches to an individual's life, considering their genetic makeup as they metabolize lipids or metabolize fats, that goes a long way to determining the plaque buildup in our artery system. So it's very important to understand that one size doesn't fit all. So we've seen people in our life that, for example, have what is considered labeled the heart attack gene and or the Alzheimer's disease gene, which is in genetic analyses reports. And those things yield, generally speaking, about a 40 to 50% increased risk of either Alzheimer's and or cardiovascular disease when confronted with the standard American diet, which is a high-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. So you can see those resiliencies or lack therein in these genetics, and you also get clues to what kind of tests to run. I'm talking about your typical blood biomarker tests. And so by looking at the whole picture from the, you know, the genes to the environment to even what the person is telling you to the family history, it gives you a lot of ways that you can go about preventing things before they start. And that's the key to it all, is not going there, but preventing it ahead of time.
Wow. Okay. And the final one in the core pillars for physical health, peptides. Wow. Say more.
Yeah. Peptides are nothing more than strings of amino acids that are less than 50 strands long. That's by definition. Now, amino acids, as we know, are natural occurring substances in the body that make things. Proteins are made of amino acids, for example. Enzymes are made of proteins. And we have 20 amino acids that we deal with. About 9 of them are essential, meaning we have to take those in from the diet. The other 11 are made, or some of them are conditionally essential if we don't have the original essential ones. But peptides typically are strung together in a lab, and they match the same peptides in our body. And we have multiple peptides we use that would do things such as repair body structure, repair muscles, repair bones, repair ligaments, tendons, nerves, turn down inflammation. We have some that reduce body fat. We have some that sustain muscle. We have some that rebuild brain. We have some that induce better cellular healing and better DNA repair. These things are not secrets. They're just not used mainstream as much as they often should, and I think we probably would guess why, because they bring about healing and resolve to things. So these are just tools we use, but peptides is one of our favorite things that we use for pretty much everybody.
So would you say in the form of collagen peptides, or how do people get a peptides in a way that you feel like their body assimilates well?
Yeah, great question. So when you take in collagen peptides through powders that people are familiar with, they have to be disassembled in the gut. So the collagen proteins is disassembled. The amino acids are strung across the cell membrane into the bloodstream, and then they're reassembled into collagen again. That's the thing people need to understand. What we're talking about typically with us is we will take those amino acids apart, and we will inject those things in a subcutaneous manner. And that means that many times you can take them orally or intranasally too, but subcutaneous gets around the body. And that's just a little baby insulin needle, of course, but they're harmless and have little side effect. But you have to have a doctor to get those for you. They're very easy to do. They're not that expensive at all, and it sure doesn't hurt a bit. It's like maybe you might feel a mosquito bite in your subcutaneous fat one out of every 20 injections.
So before we move on from peptides, who would be the ideal candidate for someone to give themselves peptide shots or go to the doc and get peptide shots?
You know, Susie, that's a great question. I think there's some peptides out there such as like BPC-157 that are basically for everybody. It provides cardiovascular protection. Any person that has any family history, if you have of that, if you have muscles that are not repairing, certainly you can use some peptides. Old injuries that are not healing very well, or maybe surgeries that you've just had or surgeries you're getting ready to have to speed up healing. Any of those things are very, very applicable. Brain fog, anxiety, nervousness, trouble sleeping, you name it, they're good. So you can look at pretty much really any adult that wants to better their health.
Wow, interesting. Okay, so that's kind of the physical. And again, during the live show, we talked a little bit about, and you even touched on the movement, which I so appreciate, touched on sleep. And you, in your book, Quest for Wellness, you could lay out a very simple plan. I'm just going to read it so friends could hear this, just because it's really comprised of steps that take 90 minutes. And then we'll talk a little about emotional, intellectual, spiritual health, and we're going to let you go. I know you've got stuff to do. But here, the physical one, I appreciate it so much. So the physical activity is like walking for 10 minutes. Take time to prepare and eat two vegetables a day. That's about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Go to bed earlier for increased sleep. That may take 30 minutes out of your day. Emotional, write in your personal journal, 10 minutes in a day. Intellectual, take a mini vacation and daydream a little bit. I've read that that just kind of nourishes the brain to unhitch from your daily and just put your head back and dream and create and ask God to just speak to you. That's 5 minutes. Intellectual, that does something for your brain. I think in our grade school days, they always treated you like you were there was something wrong with you. But that's
yeah, you
actually
got in trouble
so good
for
you.
That.
Yeah. All right. Read a nonfiction book or manual. That's another just to contribute to your intellectual health. 10 minutes, and then spiritual. Sit in silence for 5 minutes, and then read a Bible for 10 minutes. All of that, 90 minutes, and you're investing in all these core aspects of your health. So let's just touch on the emotional health. I mean, again, you probably see people who are all out exercising, working out, but not tending to their inner life. So say a word if you would.
Yeah, you know, one thing I tell people to do, deal with their emotions, and it's just this is really interesting. Just do 1 minute of silence per day, 1 minute. And you can give yourself a little test right now for those people that are listening. If sitting in silence 1 minute stresses you out to even think about it, you're probably too wired up already. Mm-hmm. So just chill out a minute. And what I tell people to do is you got to turn the cell phone upside down, you know, get away from your computer, go sit by yourself and look at the second hand on your watch and just go sit somewhere. Mm-hmm. And just watch that second hand go around and don't say a word. I'm talking no pets, no dogs, nothing. no husband, no wife, no kids, just get quiet. And you'll find that the silence is peace, and peace is the silence. And if you can progress that to where you can go 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, you'll find, people will find that that's actually a reset for the system. And one thing along those lines too, work on diaphragmatic breathing. And what that means is if you put your hand on your belly right now and begin to, when you inhale, the belly goes out and the upper body doesn't move. And when you exhale, the belly comes in. So you're actually, on the inhale, you're forcing the belly outwards. And so the breath is pushed down. Both of those things create what's called a parasympathetic nervous system arousal, or a relaxation state of the body. You can actually lower blood pressure, you can lower heart rate, you can lower respiration rate, and certainly create a sense of relaxation.
I would also say in that, you know, I mean, that sitting in silence really could apply both to emotional and spiritual. But mm-hmm. as you sit in silence, I really believe as you wait on God and you focus yep. on Him, He will bring to surface maybe things that you've been stuffing in the basement that are cause of your emotional angst. I mean, we've been so busy. If there's one thing that COVID has done, it's forced us to reckon with some of the stuff we've been stuffing down. But don't you just think God is such a gentle healer that as you sit in silence and He brings that up, something unresolved, He'll walk you through it as well.
You know, Susie, the greatest times I have is when I shut my mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm serious. I say to myself all the time, Mark, don't miss a good opportunity to shut up, please. And you know, I'm telling you, you know, God gives us two ears physically and one mouth, and I think that's more than just you know, literally looking at that. It means that we should listen twice as much as we talk. And it's in every relationship we have, you know, as you and I have built a relationship, you know, going back and forth to these shows. I mean, I listen to you. I listen to your stuff, and I want to know you. And I can't get to know you unless I listen to you. And I can't listen to you if I'm talking all the time. So, you know, I do concur. There's a lot to that. And if we would just get quiet, the antenna would be tuned in more to the sound that we need to hear, as opposed to perhaps ourselves just blabbering on.
Thank you, Lord. In your book, you said, as you inhale, envision yourself taking in all of God's goodness and love. And as you exhale, envision yourself releasing all of the negative emotions you may be harboring. Make deep breathing a form of prayer. And it's actually a detoxifying exercise at that. As we get ready to wrap here, Doc, I'm wondering if you just cast a vision of what it might look like if a wave of healing spread through the body of Christ. You know, I think so many want just to be zapped, and I get it. Sometimes I just mm-hmm. want to be zapped, you know, just, but we have infrastructures that we've built by our choices and mindsets that if God just yep. zapped us today, we would go back to old practices tomorrow. And so some of us need the process of walking out this healing process. But what if we all just decided, I'm going to trust you, God. I'm going to pick up my mat. I'm going to start walking and do the next thing you tell me. What might happen?
I see this happening, Susie. Now, I see it happening from a
me
remnant,
too.
If you will. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I don't doubt this one bit. So I hope our listeners are catching hold, because, if friends, it's you, it's me, it's Susie, it's all of us that are supposed to do this. It's a world where believers walk healed, where diseases become nothing more than a distraction, where they're nothing more than an unheard of thing. I mean, in our churches all across the world, we have conversations like, hey, Susie, we haven't seen a sick person here in 3 months. What is going on? That's the kind of vision we need to have, where the believer is the example and is actually doing exactly what Jesus said when He gave the Great Commission, is they are representative of health, and wherever they go, they lay hands on the sick, and the sick will get well. That God's presence is in believers so much that people gravitate to them and say, hey, what is it about you? And bam, they get touched by God's power, where we shine as stars. And I want people to get this imagery, because it's not an imagery, it's real. When you look up at the city, from the city into the sky at night, Susie, you see a lot of darkness. You don't see stars because we are cluttered with distraction. But if we get out in the country, 10 miles out of the big city, and we look up at night, the same sky, what do you see? Mm-hmm. You see a lot of stars. The stars are always there, but we need to get where we're shining bright. It's the same amount of darkness, but people see those stars. And so the vision that we need to cast and the vision we need to have is be those stars, shining bright in a darkened world. We don't care how dark it is. It doesn't matter, because ultimately our job is just to shine. Yeah. And I believe that that's the destiny, truly, for every believer, by just grasping a hold of God's goodness.
Wow. Dr. Mark, what a pleasure to have you, and how gracious you were to give us an extra almost half hour of your time.
Oh,
thank
it's my
you,
pleasure.
Thank you, sir. What a great conversation. And friends, check out his book, The Quest for Wellness, Dr. Mark Sherwood. And blessings to you, my friend. Thanks for listening. Hope you found some encouragement here. And we'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Suzy Larson Live podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter today at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, you can subscribe to the podcast now at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Thanks for listening to Suzy Larson Live.